Well, we're going to end our session this morning back in adolescence, because I feel like if we're discussing disease prevention across the lifespan, we need to start when health behaviors are being formed and when they're being really solidified, and adolescence is the time, in my mind, when we really have to start doing that. I have no financial conflicts to disclose either. One of the reasons I feel like it is so important to take a public health approach to mental health in general, but specifically depression, are some of what these numbers here demonstrate. In a recent survey of over 10,000 adolescents, a nationally representative survey, what they found was that almost 32% of children by the age of 18 are going to have suffered from some type of anxiety disorder. Behavior disorders, mood disorders, and substance use disorders are all higher in prevalence by the age of 18 than pediatric asthma, and of course definitely more than juvenile diabetes. And both of these have received a lot of public health attention. I think we've made really great strides. We need to do this with mental health. Let's move on to the next slide. Depressive disorders are projected to be the leading cause of global health burden by 2030. As opposed to anxiety disorders, which are the highest in childhood and actually decrease over the age range of adolescence, mood disorders are exactly the opposite. The rates of depression rise sixfold across adolescence from ages 13 to 18, from 2% to 17%. Some of those prevalence rates have actually been reported to be even as high as 25% by the end of adolescence, and that prevalence is the same across the age span of adulthood. There's also a two to one female to male ratio that occurs in terms of the higher prevalence of depression in females that is also present by the end of adolescence and is maintained throughout adulthood. So depression is definitely a disorder that begins during adolescence, but one of the main problems with this is that it has a very high recurrence rate throughout adulthood, and those symptoms that begin during adolescence are usually highly persistent across adolescence and into young adulthood. One of the most devastating outcomes of depression, of course, is suicide. On the recent Youth Risk Behavior Survey, they found that up to 15% of high school students have seriously considered suicide, which is, of course, the third leading cause of death for children ages 10 to 24 years old. There's a lot of writing on this slide. The reason I put this up here is because what I feel is a very promising theory to help guide prevention efforts is this idea of cognitive vulnerability stress theory. There are three different specific vulnerabilities that have been proposed in the literature. They are distinct in their conceptualizations because they come from three separate theories. What this proposes in general is that certain adolescents possess negative styles of thinking that when the stressors begin to increase during adolescence, increases their risk of developing depressive symptoms because of this maladaptive information processing or this inability to distract themselves from the negative thoughts and feelings that are created when they are going out in the world and experiencing more of these stressful situations. The framework looks like this, and this actually probably brings it home a little bit better. What is proposed is that it begins with this increase in negative life events. Then we've got three separate vulnerabilities or ways of thinking that can increase adolescents' risk of experiencing increased depressive symptoms. This is specifically the framework that I used for this study, but there's also proposed a transactional process that occurs between number of depressive symptoms back to stressful life events, which is where we see the cyclical process that then ends up being persistent and recurrent. As a quick example, let's say that you have an adolescent who is experiencing insomnia, loss of sleep, and then they are sitting in a classroom, they're unable to pay attention, they begin to get negative grades, another stressful life event, then they are, again, those bad grades are processed through vulnerabilities, and that just increases either the severity of their depressive symptoms or begets more depressive symptoms. The purpose of this study was to describe baseline associations among stressful life events, those three cognitive vulnerabilities, and depressive symptoms in a sample of adolescents, and then to determine the unique contribution of the cognitive vulnerabilities to depressive symptoms when these adolescents are experiencing stressful life events. The results that I'm presenting here are cross-sectional analysis of a longitudinal pilot study that I've been conducting during my postdoc. My dissertation looked a lot like this. It was a cross-sectional examination of these variables. The next step, though, is to look at them prospectively across time to see which variables actually predict the development of depressive symptoms. So the results that I'm presenting here are the baseline data that was gathered from this pilot sample. I did use community-based convenient sample with community-based recruiting from a predominantly rural area. I distributed flyers, met with groups, and would meet these people in their homes to interview their adolescent so they could take a battery of standardized measures. There were 41 adolescents that participated in this baseline sample. These are the standardized measures that I used, a standardized checklist basically of stressful life events that examined negative life events within four domains: within the family, romantic relationships, school, and friendship negative life events. Depressive symptoms, dysfunctional attitudes, a negative inferential style, and ruminative response style were all measured with the standard measure that is found in the literature for each of these vulnerabilities. I used descriptive analyses to inspect the distribution and range of the scores. Bivariate analyses were just looking at the correlations between each of the variables. And then for multivariate analysis, in order to be able to control for the variables and determine the unique contribution of each vulnerability, I used hierarchical linear regression modeling. The sample had slightly more males than females. The age range, as you can see, I had a little bit more buy-in from the 11 and 12-year-olds than the older. An interesting side note here is that many of the respondents that initially responded to my flyer were the 11 and 12-year-olds who happened to have older siblings. And I'm already going to be out in the home. They were going to be getting a Walmart gift card. And so I was able to get more of those 13, 14, and 15-year-olds because they were siblings. So I think in future work, having some sibling analysis to look and see if there are similarities or differences within these thinking patterns to see if there's some type of familial link that we could, in terms of looking towards intervention, focus on the families and the way that the parents are modeling thinking styles as well for their children. 53% were Caucasian. This was a rural area of Tennessee. Rural Tennessee is predominantly Caucasian, but I also had quite a few African American, and then the other really represents a Caucasian and African American mix. And as you can see in terms of SES, this is also very representative of rural Tennessee. The overwhelming majority were in the two lowest socioeconomic classes. So this was an extremely poor group that I was going out to meet. Again, a lot of data here. I want to mainly draw your attention. The stressful life events was a checklist, but it is analyzed as a continuous measure, looking within each of the domains and then overall the scale ranges in terms of how many questions pertain to each domain are there in the parentheses. Depressive symptoms, not too high or too elevated in this sample, as well as the bottom one here, rumination, also not as significant as I found with my full dissertation study, but still, as we'll see with the correlation, some pretty impressive associations, both at the bivariate and multivariate level. So I first want to draw your attention to the friendship domain of the negative life events. As you can see, even with this small sample, some pretty robust correlations, all statistically significant, particularly between the friends and the depressive symptoms. Then depressive symptoms were statistically significantly correlated with each of the domains of negative life events. And then ruminative response style specifically, which, again, is this tendency to repetitively and passively focus on thoughts and feelings of distress without being able to distract from those or engage in effective problem solving that would move them past those negative thoughts and feelings. And we've found here very robust correlations, all statistically significant, particularly between ruminative response style and, again, with depressive symptoms. So those correlations that we've seen make the final regression model kind of make sense. For step one, I added the personal characteristics of gender and age, and as you can see, there was no statistically significant change in ability to explain depressive symptoms with just these two variables. At the second step, I added in the four domains of negative life events. As you can see, it resulted in a statistically significant change in the ability to explain depressive symptoms, with about 45% of the variability explained simply by adding in stress, or the variables of stressor that I looked at. The only domain that was statistically significant or uniquely predicted depressive symptoms is that friendship domain, which I've highlighted here for you. And the third step, I added in the cognitive vulnerabilities, because if you remember from the diagram, stress, cognitive vulnerabilities, increase in depressive symptoms. With the addition of these three cognitive vulnerabilities, the explanatory power of the model increased to explaining 63% of the variance in depressive symptoms. For such a small sample, this is a really impressive number, particularly to have it statistically significant at this point. So I think in terms of being onto something for future intervention, I think these baseline analyses really show promise. The only vulnerability that remained that was statistically significant was rumination, which is not surprising with the correlation that we saw, and explained approximately 27 or so percent of the variability in depressive symptoms. But interestingly enough, the friends domain of negative life events also remained a unique contributor. So with ruminative response style and friendship stressors, they were the only unique contributors to depressive symptoms when controlling for all the other variables in the model. The overall model, like I said, explains 63% of the variance in these depressive symptoms. There were limitations, obviously, with this pilot sample. We had a very small sample size. This was a cross-sectional analysis. The full study was actually a six-month prospective longitudinal study, and I think even in terms of a limitation of that, in order to capture developmentally sensitive and increase in depressive symptoms over time, you have to increase that span. So this, as a feasibility pilot, worked well, but in the future we definitely need to have more analyses across a larger time span. It was predominantly, as I said, a rural sample, which limits generalizability to urban and suburban populations. But as a strength, the rural adolescents are extremely underrepresented in the literature, particularly low socioeconomic status rural adolescents, which is what a lot of our rural areas in America are. So I think that these results, although they limit the generalizability, have a strength in the fact that we are finally looking at adolescents who reside in rural areas. As I said, future directions are going to be prospective longitudinal methodology that spans a longer time span than just this 6 months. We need to use a wider age range and maybe some more sophisticated statistical analyses to be able to look at intra-individual change over time as well as inter-individual change over time, so that instead of, you know, feasibly not very possible, or it would be extremely time-consuming and expensive to follow an adolescent from 12 to 18 years old, even though that would be ideal in every adolescent researcher's mind. But if we were able to follow them for several years and have several cohorts across that time span, be more feasible, more cost-effective, but we could still look at change over time across the entire age span of adolescents. I would certainly like to increase the diversity in the sample, perhaps sampling from urban, suburban, and rural areas, and making sure that we are able to increase the racial and ethnic diversity of the sample. And then incorporate additional data collection methods. That was an additional limitation, is that I used self-report, just standardized measures. Need to incorporate some of these interview-based methods. What I found when I'm in these homes, it was an unanticipated finding for me, the reason you do pilot studies, is that as the adolescent was taking this survey, I would sit and talk with the parent that was there, and they would tell me everything that was going on in their lives, about their other children, about taking care of aging parents, you name it. They felt, I went in there as a nurse, but as a researcher as well, and they wanted to unload. And that was some really rich data that I completely missed gathering. So I think using this type of methodology where I am visiting at least for the first assessment in the home and gathering some of that rich family context, broadening to sort of a more social ecological type model, is really going to inform the intervention that will be developed and take it away from just looking at this individual level of what's happening in the adolescent's mind to looking where the adolescent lives, so that we can just increase the chances that this intervention is going to really take into account all the different facets of the adolescent's lives. As a final thought, I would just like to say that, in particular, decreasing the impact of friendship stressors and improving this tendency to ruminate may be particularly salient targets for intervention. And as we're developing prevention interventions focused on the individual's mind, perhaps these are the areas where we should focus our efforts. To reiterate what I started with, the significance and burden of depression to individuals, family, and society really does require a public health approach to prevention and early intervention with these adolescents. Thank you.